Oh, Caleb, 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 we are going to dig deep into that. Caleb likes when it's about him, but maybe not in this case. We'll figure it out. We'll get going. This is the Bite Me Podcast. Welcome in. I'm John Lopez. Captain Scott Null is right across from me. Caleb McCumber is right across from me. I don't see any trophies or big checks behind him, so we'll get to that. But we really appreciate you guys joining us as always. And as always, we got some topics for you. Really good, timely topics, which is why I like the fact that we do this podcast every week and we don't miss a week because things happen like what happened last week with, where I was, that tide went out. I mean, way out. There were images of Galveston Beach with the water all the way out past the end of the pier or near the end of the pier. We're going to talk about that. Navigating extreme low tides is to be more specific. Some bad weather things happened as well. People getting stuck. So we'll talk about some of the essentials there. And then a really good question from one of our listeners on the Bite Me group page. And yes, this is your reminder to click right there. We'll let you in. One of the administrators will let you in and you can become a member of the Bite Me group page on Facebook. And good things happen there. We have some real good specials that a lot of our friends offer to our Bite Me listeners. We might get to some of those here today as well, which are always good because everybody likes to save a buck. And of course, the questions and the pictures and the topic suggestions are all there. We had a topic suggestion about DC Reels. I wanted to ask Scott about that. He's real big on those, and we've been talking about those here and there. Wading thick mud, we talk about that mud that comes up to your knee. We got all kinds of topics to get to you, but want to remind you about the group page. Definitely wanted to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's everywhere. It's a monster, and it's all because of you guys. We kind of steer the ship and answer your questions with the experience that Scott and Caleb has, and to a certain degree, all the experience that I have over the last 40 years or so. You can subscribe at Spotify, at iTunes, at Google Podcasts, and everywhere else that you get a podcast. Caleb, 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 you had the whole Bite Me community behind you. I'm not going to say you let us down. I'm not going to say that because it happens to the best of them. Scott might say it. I'm not going to say it, but it happens to the best of them. This is one of those, if you're on the group page, you saw images of how skinny Caleb's boat can get. And that's really, really, really skinny, down to the mud on the side of the boat's skinny. But take us through what happened, because I know for a fact, we can talk about it now. You were feeling really, really good about things at the Redfish World Series. For those who are just joining us for the first time, Caleb did qualify, was doing quite well in Louisiana, scouting for about 6 or 8 days, which was in itself a huge investment and just heartbreaking that it ended the way it did. But I'm not going to spoil everything. Take us through beginning to end once the tournament started, or even before, if you want.
Man, I was fighting for everybody, not just myself. I knew I had the Bite Me crew behind me. I knew my wife really wanted me to bring home $100,000. I was fighting pretty hard, and whenever our tournament ended like it did, I felt pretty sick about it, and felt like I had let some people down. We'll start with the good stuff first. Man, I tell you what, that Redfish World Series was something else. It was something else. The captain's meeting alone was a really nice dinner with waitresses and waiters and table. Man, we had tablecloths. They hired a comedian to come in and do about an hour stand-up act. He had two open bars. I mean, top flight, top notch. If anybody out in the fishing world has a goal, it should be to go to the Redfish World Series. So you had mentioned that Daniel and I, we had spent 6 or 8 days there. In reality, we probably spent closer to 25 days there. We went every couple of months for about the past year. And my goal going into it was I knew that I was kind of new to the area. I knew that I was new to the pack down there and what kind of competition I was up against. And I never once was of the mindset that I wanted to go find those 9, 9.5 pound fish. My goal was to find a 7.5 to 8.5 pound average in an area where I could catch 17 of them. So if you want it all, you had to catch 17 fish. And that was the goal. And, you know, as we talked on the side last week, but I had to kind of be kind of quiet about, you know, the trips over there last year paid off. It took us about 3 days to look at everything we had looked at in the past. And we went and looked at this one area, and there was about six ponds all in a row. It was exactly what I was looking for. It was a long canal, and about six ponds in a row all had one to two, sometimes three schools of fish in it. We had ponds where everything in there was 7 to 8 pounds. We had ponds where you had eight and a half pounders, but with some overs mixed in. And my idea was, because, you know, I'm not a complete noob to fishing, is I knew that that weather was coming in, and I knew that that wind was going to blow to the west, and I knew that I was east of the Mississippi River, therefore it was going to dump the tide. What I didn't know is the difference between Texas and a 40-mile-an-hour front in Louisiana. And on top of that, Louisiana already was having, like, you know, one and a half foot tide swings. Mm-hmm. So the reason I mentioned the ditch is my idea was, is that we could, on day one, we could get into those ponds and catch the fish we needed to fish. And then as that tide pulled out, they would slide off into that ditch, and I would still have a target rich environment to go build my stringer, you know, for 4 days straight. Mm-hmm. What I didn't know is that ditch would also go dry. There were lakes that were 4 or 5 foot deep when we were pre-fishing and coming in. And whenever the airboat got us out and I ran across those lakes going home, the crab traps were halfway out of the water. We were staying with in this guide's trailer park kind of thing. The guy's name is the dude. I mean, if you're from Hopedale, Louisiana, and a full-time fishing guide, and your name is the dude, you have won at life. And the dude is a very long-winded dude. And so every time I called him to say, hey, we threw a breaker, where's it at? I got 2 hours of stories. And in one of those stories, he was telling me he'd been there 20 years. He'd never seen the tide dump like that. There were tournament fishermen that live in New Orleans. They said they had never seen that. You know, I kind of already put out the what happened. I guess we could reiterate that. I don't know.
We'll post some more pictures when we post the podcast on the group page. But all right, so everything's awesome. You're on them. You have a plan. You know the tide's coming in and out. I'm coming out. You maybe missed a couple of things here and there, but nothing that anybody else wouldn't miss. And great captain's meeting. You go to bed, put your head on the pillow. You're thinking, all right, this might be pretty good. Because I know your goal was top 12, you say? Top 10, something like that?
I just wanted to be in the top 12. I wanted to make it to Sunday and give myself a chance to win this thing.
So you had to be feeling pretty good about things.
I did. You know, all week during that week, they were forecasting all those high winds and dumps and everything. And, you know, I told Daniel, I said, you know, in reality, our best day of fishing could be Thursday, because that dump's going to happen. You know, the fish that aren't in these ponds are going to pull up to the drains. The fish that are in it are going to come to the drains. It could be really good. But, you know, I was still kind of apprehensive when I went to bed. Woke up the next morning. The canal we were staying on still looked kind of normal. They launch us. We get out there. Our spot was relatively close to the launch, so we got there pretty quick. And when we got there, the water had been up probably about a foot and a half the whole time we've been fishing. Mm-hmm. And when we get there, the water has not dropped one iota. And I looked at Daniel and I said, oh, it's on. Because as long as we have sun, I really don't care how windy it is. In those smaller ponds, I can still sight cast. And I told Daniel all week, if I can sight cast, we've got a shot at this. And if we can sight cast, Daniel's good at seeing them too. And there was tide as high, pulled into the first pond just like we had planned. I think my sixth, seventh, eighth cast was an eighth under 27, 8 1/4 pound fish. That is exactly what we wanted. Whenever I caught him, I kind of spooked the school, and I stayed there about another 30 minutes, and that school they just weren't really wanting to eat. And instead of staying on them and beating them up and getting them more and more and more gun shy, we decided to go to some other ponds, went to other ponds, caught two more good fish. You know, there was some room for improvement, but they were good, solid day one fish. And, went back to that other pond. That when we went back, the tide was about a foot lower, but, you know, it still had a foot and a half, 2 foot of water in it. And we troll around in there and power pull down on the point, and I'm fishing, and I'm watching the tide drop as we're there. And I finally told Daniel, I said, Daniel, we have no choice. We have to leave. We're going to end up getting hung up in here. Mm-hmm. We pick up the power poles, drop the trolling motor. We're trolling out, no problem. You know, you're kind of blowing some, you know, hitting bottom a little bit, but nothing that we don't do every day.
Yeah.
Well, the wind had built to probably 35, 40 miles an hour. It caught us sideways on the boat, and shoved the boat up on this little high spot in the middle of that pond. Mm-hmm. And the trolling motor couldn't quite get us off because the wind was holding us on it. I get down on the big motor, fire it up, and you know, get down on that thing. Well, the bottom, it wasn't slick mud. It had a lot of, you know, old dead grass, and we just got hung up. Now, as after we got hung up, I started getting on the phone trying to, I had some tournament buddies in the area. They couldn't get to us. We called airboats. The airboats were already busy pulling other people out. If we could have got somebody to pull us off, we could have got into weigh-in on day one, which would have been absolutely fantastic, because had we got into weigh-in, unless my bogus are incredibly off, on day two, we had to weigh like 10 and a half pounds and four fish to advance to day three. And on day three, the weights zero out. And then the fishing Saturday and Sunday was pretty good over there. So it was a really bad stroke of luck. You know, if we hadn't had any fish in the box, that'd be one thing. But it was a bad stroke of luck. Do I think I should have done something else and try to avoid it? I really don't think so. I think I played it correctly. Just that wind shoving us up on that hump was the kiss of death. But
so how long were you stuck?
I think we were out there 6.5 hours. We got maybe longer. We got stuck about 11:30 in the morning, and the airboat showed up at dark. And I want to say dark is like 6:30, something like that.
And what time was the weigh-in start ending?
The weigh-in ended at 3 o'clock.
Okay. Well, you were SOL. There had to be a moment where you guys had just kind of looked at each other and said, well, that's it.
I think I accepted it before Daniel did. As soon as we got hung on that hump and I couldn't get us off of the big motor in the first try, that water was dropping too fast. We spent another 2 hours, trying to tear everything on the boat up, trying to get out. We got out and tried to push. Daniel tied a rope to the front of the boat and got out and tried to pull. But you're waist deep in mud that's got 2 inches of water on top of it. You can't move. You can't pull. You can't do anything. We were, believe it or not, I found myself in that situation more times than Daniel has. So after that first attempt, I knew it was over for us. And man, it was a sickening feeling. There was enough shock in the situation that I don't think either one of us got overly upset about it. It was just like, well, crap, what do we do now?
And you had the fish. Man,
we threw some good fish out. We couldn't even turn our fish loose there. The water was so low, the fish would have flopped over and died. Yeah. We had to get pulled out just to turn our good fish loose.
That's crazy. Well, Scott, one thing that I mentioned with you guys when we were I was sharing the topics is the Peanut Gallery is definitely going to weigh in on this. And you and I are the Peanut Gallery, but I think you might have a few more thoughts on this.
Well, I just sat here and watched it. I mean, not being in communications with him, but I'm sitting at the house and I just kept watching the water fall and fall and fall. I was watching on the NOAA Tides and Currents. There's one
that
little station over there called Shell Beach. And I was watching that Shell Beach one, and it was amazing how fast it was falling. It was like a rock. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of really good dumps. I don't know that I've ever seen a dump like that.
Well, I'll tell you, Caleb, I know you want to talk about that, but, you know, I just did my normal, you know, Friday, go down, fish Friday, Saturday, Sunday down in the beautiful Sargent, East Matagorda Bay. I've never seen it like that in East Matagorda Bay. I've been fishing there for 20-something years. I've had my trailer there for the last 2+ years again. And, I mean, that little canal behind my house, you guys have seen it. There was maybe 6 inches of water, and it was all the way off my dock by about 3 or 4 feet. I mean, I've seen it after hurricanes and stuff with nothing even close to that. But you definitely wanted to come in on what Scott was saying.
It dropped 4 foot in a day over there. The chart that Scott, because Scott and I both watch the same charts, it literally went off the charts. It went down to where you couldn't even see how much lower it went. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about the Peanut Gallery. I found a lot of entertaining stuff. I posted a video on YouTube about it. And then, of course, you know, while I'm stuck, my friends are texting me. And people are like, well, man, you should have tried to spin it up. Well, oh, darn, I didn't think of that.
You're the king of spinning it up. You're the king of that.
Yeah. Somebody said, put your trolling motor where it's, you know, only a little bit in the water and turn it on full blast. Man, I... You ever had your trolling motor where it's jumping off the front of your boat?
Oh yeah.
I mean, we did everything. We had a couple of, we changed props. I mean, Daniel has a 5-blade prop that costs about $2,500, and I just, you should have seen the hole I made the mud with that thing. We tried absolutely everything. And then when I was coming home on Friday, I drove across the Galveston Ship Channel. I was looking at barges sitting on bottom there, there in Baytown, you know, above the channel. There were barges sitting on bottom up there. It was something else. I don't know how low it got here, but man, you know, we were asking for a northwest at about 25 or 30 for a due west at 40. Woohoo! It did it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because you know, we're going to bring this back to our listeners, us regular fishermen, and what it might mean for us. But I'm just still curious on the tournament itself. How many guys got the X? I mean, how many guys were in your boat, so to speak?
I think five of us had problems on day one. I don't think all five of us had to get towed out, but we got hung up enough that didn't get back to weigh in on time. There was one boat got stuck on Thursday that wouldn't be recoverable until Sunday. We had a excellent airboat driver that got us out. On day two, I think six or seven more boats got stuck. I think two people blew their motors trying to get unstuck. I mean, so I didn't go to launch on day two, but I was told that when you backed your boat off the trailer, you couldn't even start your motor until your boat had just floated to the middle of the channel, or else you're going to hit all the concrete and rock. And then when they launched you, you couldn't hardly get on plane. You just had to churn mud for a mile or two before you could get to a deep spot to run. I mean, it was the shrimp boat. So if you've never been to Louisiana, almost all these boat launches are on canals, and the canals are loaded with shrimp and crab boats. They were all sitting on bottom. It was something else. You know, too many people in Bite Me said, "Is this the dump? Hooray, it's the dump." I think we got too excited about it and got Mother Nature too charged up and pumped up and ready to go.
Mother Nature always wins. There's no question. Scott, have you ever seen anything like this? I mean, I've been fishing a long time.
I've seen it dump.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen it when we've had back-to-back dumps.
Yeah.
You know, we'll like have a front and it gets low and it stays, you know, it doesn't come back really good. And then we'll have a secondary front. I've seen it push it out where, I mean, hell, all of, you know, all of West Bay, you could see all the reefs. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've seen it get pretty dead gum low. Probably the lowest I ever saw it was the 83 freeze because it blew in that way. We had real high water prior to it, and then the temperature dropped 30, 40 degrees in a matter of hours. Had ice back in the marsh where I was sitting on a duck hunting, sitting in my duck blind, and ice formed up around my decoys. We drove out over the causeway later that morning, and West Bay was dry, and I'd never seen that. I mean, it was incredible. I've seen it dump that hard probably twice, maybe three times.
Well, Caleb, just to kind of put a bow on this, did the tides and such, I know there were some boats that had to be eliminated, but did it affect the leaderboard at all? I mean, was it hard to get to some good fish for the guys who did get on the leaderboard?
Oh, yes. The weights were pretty low this year, especially Thursday and Friday. There were a lot of really, really, really good teams that didn't even fill their stringers on, you know, the couple of days. It affected everybody quite a bit. Eddie and Sean won it again, and hats off to them. The three times in a row world champions, you have to bow down to that. Especially last year, there was a hurricane and major flood tides. This year, you were fishing in the Mojave, and they did it twice. But you know what I took away from it, I've always been of the opinion that win or lose, every tournament you're a little bit more dangerous if on the next one you go at it the right way. And you know, next time I find myself in that situation, I'll definitely be trying to find some fish that are more open bay than in the marsh, and you know, have some backup plans. So, but yeah, there's a lot of teams that had a really hard time this year.
Well, we know you did everything you could, and obviously, that's a hell of an honor just to have qualified for that. So now you got to go back next year. Now you got to qualify again.
I completely intend on going back next year. I wasn't planning on fishing a whole lot of tournaments next year. I changed that up. I'm probably going to fish about 10 next year. And, you know, maybe Gritter will deem us worthy to send us another invite, because I really want some redemption on this one.
All right. Let's get to how this affects us, the rest of us fishermen, because I promise I put this on the rundown for you guys, and it wasn't to take a shot at Caleb, but it was a question that we legitimately got on the Facebook group page. you know, navigating extreme low tides and while Caleb gathers his thoughts and sarcasm, I'll start with you, Scott, because you said you've seen this a couple of times. I dealt with it a little bit, but not to that extreme, obviously, this past week. You know, it was a totally different approach for me and my strategy and where to go and everything. But just navigating it sometimes, I found myself really, really careful, really, really making sure I had everything in order for those extreme. And these are absolutely extreme low tides. You know, what are your thoughts on that, Scott?
You have to know your area. I wouldn't go out. You know, Caleb had no choice. He was in a place he didn't know. But for those average guys out there fishing, only go to places that you know really, really well. I used to do it all the time back in the back of greens, and I'd be back there, and I had markers. You know, I'm sitting in deep enough water, but I know that between me and where I need to go to get out, there's a couple shallow spots. And I've always had these markers along the sides of the bayous and stuff that, hey, man, water's getting to there. I probably need to pack it up and back up a little bit. And then I would just back out to the next deepest place. That's just a matter of knowing what you're dealing with. You got a low tide that's going to happen anyway. That's what happened here. We had an outgoing tide combined with that wind. And it hit at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. So that's why it accelerated that dump. So if you know you've got that coming, you got to be extra cautious. There was many times I ran across Greens Lake, and Greens Lake's pretty deep. You know, it's deep for the boats that we run.
Right.
And look back and be running a mud trail behind me. You know, I knew I pushed it to the very last minute as far as I could push it. But the other part of it is having a light enough boat that you can push it off. That's something that they didn't have there. If they'd have been in a poling skiff, they'd have been just fine. You know, they could have gotten pushed off of it. Know your boat, know the area. If you're going to go out and fish anything that's extreme.
Caleb,
how
do you navigate extreme low tides?
With an airboat to attach to the front of my boat. You know, one of the things... I'm going to answer that, but first, John said that this wasn't to poke fun at me, and the syllabus that he swears I never read. Item number one, Caleb, will cover the whole experience, and I'm sure there will be comments. Ha ha. But I'm glad your intentions were pure, John.
Yeah, they were. Thanks for pulling back the curtain there.
So one of the things, you know, like Scott said, don't go anywhere you don't know. If you absolutely want to talk, somebody that has. I had a friend call me yesterday wanting to know how to get in the back of a lake, and I told him how, and I told him what would probably happen when he got back there, and he elected not to go. You know, crab traps, all the obvious. The one thing that I see more, at least over in my area, is whenever our lakes get really low, more birds will show up. So I can usually look out across the lake and see where birds are standing at and kind of whatnot. That lake that you and I did so well in last December, John, if it was 2 inches lower, the whole mouth of it would have birds standing across it. So that's another thing that I really pay attention to is, you know, are the birds standing around with their butt out of the water? Because that's always a bad thing if they are. Mm-hmm. But like Scott said, that's not the time to, you know, just go running around and trying to find new stuff.
I want to get both you guys' reaction to this. Here's how I approach it when I saw what was happening. I'll try to fish the mouth of a bayou or a drain, maybe a little bit on the intercoastal there, rather than go all the way up. I mean, just as a strategy until I know I can get in and out or what the tide is doing or if it's starting to come back in or move one way or the other. So that's the first thing. I think the number one thing is you have to really adjust your strategy. And that includes, when I went and tried to catch some redfish, I didn't have a whole lot of luck. So my strategy became, okay, I can go up in this, you know, back lake. I can go do this. I know there's some guys I've seen some pictures that are catching some redfish. You know, I could probably do it, but I'm a trout guy anyway. So I went to the dump part on the bay and started really fishing, you know, some of my spots, off the shorelines a little bit where the trout were and had a lot of luck catching trout this last week. So I kind of changed from maybe I'll try to catch some redfish to well, I'm going to catch some trout. And then the third thing is when I did get up in there, earlier in the morning, and I think this is really important for a lot of people. I want to get your thoughts. I actually, to the point, and you don't have to do this, I actually took some pictures of what was exposed and what was not exposed in terms of the shell. Where did the shell start on that really, really, you know, greatly exposed shoreline that I like to fish year round? So now I know, okay, right there, it's about, you know, how many feet off the shoreline. Right there, it turns from shell to mud. I mean, I have those pictures on my phone just kind of as a point of reference. So it becomes almost like a scouting mission as well. I want to get your thoughts there. I'll start with you, Caleb.
Yeah, no, we always talk about it. When that tide's low like that, it is the time to go do that. The last time I remember the tide this low was, I think, in October of 11 or 12, where the Condo Cove was almost dry and several of the coves that we like to wade in were dry, spring bayou, stuff like that. And I spent all day long doing what you said you did. In fact, I got about 3 pictures of you in my text messages from this weekend.
People oh, really?
Saying, hey, there's either, hey, I see Lopez, or is that Lopez?
That's so funny. Look, before you go on, it's so cool what this podcast is doing. I know Scott experiences this all the time. I was launching the boat, and a guy comes up the channel, and he goes, OG! And I'm like, hey, what's up? And he was a podcast listener. I get out there. I start out on that one back lake that I like to fish. I was at the mouth of it doing exactly what I just said, you know, just trying to see if there were any redfish there. And some guy putters up real quietly. I'm like, why is this guy getting so close? And then I realized I know why he's trying to get so close. He wants to see if it's me. And so we chatted, had a nice conversation. Then I get out to where I was catching some trout. And I get a text message. Hey, I think I'm behind you. And there's another listener, another friend. It's cool. It's actually cool. And by the way, just so people don't know, I don't mind at all. So yeah, I'm happy to go say shout at you. But so you got some text too.
Yeah, it looked like you were on your trout stuff whenever I got the text. But I had the same thing. I was 496 miles away in Louisiana. And I'm pulling my boat out. And this fellow says, you must be Captain Caleb. It took me off guard and I denied it. And, but then he went on to say that he really enjoys the podcast. So, it's neat, the community we're building, but I think you did the exact right thing on these low tides. One of the guys sent me pictures of y'all. They were kind of putting around inside those South Shoreline, coves and drains and everything. And they were finding shrimp and they did pretty well on the redfish down there. So it's the absolute correct approach, I would say.
Scott.
Yeah, I've written articles about scouting on low tides.
Mm-hmm.
And generally that would be my January, February article, because you're going to have consistent low tides then. It doesn't have to be because of a front necessarily, but get back in some of those lakes, just creep in. You know, if you can putter in, you can putter out for the most part, unless that tide's falling like it did, you know, this time. If it's right. Still falling, maybe don't do that. But once it reaches its, you know, the bottom, then you know you can putter in, putter out. And there was times I'd take my kayak, and that way I could mud scoot even further back in there and get a look at some of the far, far back lakes. What it does for you in those lakes is you get to see the drain. Yeah. Each lake has a little drain through the middle of it most of the time, one side or the other or the middle, and it's just 6 or 8 inches deeper. It's where everything drains off to before it goes out. And knowing exactly where those are can really help you out in a lake when you go in there and you've got a school and they just disappear on you.
Mm-hmm.
And like Dean likes to say, they went subterranean on you.
Yeah.
You've been watching them. They're creeping along. Maybe somebody bumps the boat or ice chest lid gets slammed.
Yeah.
And they just disappear. Start casting to that spot that you know is a little bit deeper, because that's where they went.
Yeah. It was good. I probably, like you said, Scott, I probably could have gone back there. I kind of chickened out because I wanted to catch some trout anyway, or try to, and it worked out just fine. So, another question we had on the group page, I got this on a direct message, and I wanted to bring this up because even though we may have touched on this a little bit, I got another message that was, I thought, brilliant. And maybe I'm the last, you know, late to the party on this, but the question was about, you know, people getting stuck, and as they did this past weekend, it wasn't just you, Caleb, trust me on that. Essentials on the boat for bad weather / you know, being stuck. And so this was sent to me, and I swear I'm going to do this every time the weather turns or I get into maybe some mechanical issues or whatever. He said the first thing he did, and I thought it was brilliant, was change the message on his phone. And the reason he did that, and you're nodding your head, so maybe you've done this, Caleb, but I have never even heard of this, and it's a brilliant idea. You get into some trouble. That guy that got into some big trouble not too long ago that we talked on the podcast, maybe he did it. In other words, you know, your phone might die. Your battery might die. You might not be able to charge it. So the first thing he did was, hey, this is John Lopez. I'm fishing right here. I'm having some mechanical issues. I'm going to beach the boat here. If anybody gets this message, you know where to find me. I won't move. And I thought that was a brilliant idea. Caleb?
I haven't done that, but I have texted the wife something along these lines. I screwed up again. This is where I'm at, just in case, you know, I don't fish solo by myself much anymore, but even back when I did, especially if it was like one of those foggy mornings, I would tell my wife, you know, hey, I'm going over to this cove. This is where I'm starting at, you know, that way if there's a wreck or something like that happened, you know, that, and then it's very easy these days to have a portable cell phone charger, the little brick like you take on the airplane.
Yeah, I have one of those, and of course the chargers on the boat as well. But you know, there's no guarantees, and so I thought that was great. Hopefully I'll never have to leave that message, but that way even if your battery dies, that message is getting out.
You're gonna get a kick out of what I did. As soon as I knew me and Daniel were stuck and we were gonna be there for a while, the first thing I did was eat all the sandwiches. Just ate all the provisions right away. That way, if we were
sure
there
Daniel
later
appreciated
on,
that.
Well, if we were there later on, it would just save an argument between the two of us, because it's all about, you know, keeping a positive attitude. And so it was the least I could do. I ate three sandwiches while I was out there.
You're a giver. See, you did him a favor.
Provisions gone.
You did Daniel a favor. But Scott, I thought that was
a cool message. That's a good strategy.
That's not the best strategy. I gotta admit. But Scott, I thought that was a really good tip. I wanted to share it with our listeners. But the other part of it was just the essentials. What do you absolutely positively have? Even if you just bait, people often think, oh, I'm just bay fishing. You know, it's not that big a deal. Man, when that weather turns and you don't know where, and it's dark and the fog and all that, you better have some stuff on that boat.
Yeah. When we were kayak fishing a whole lot and really pushing the edges, you know, as far as paddling a long ways and pushing it on weather, and, you know, fishing some of these tournaments where you do stupid things, I carried a dry bag that had an extra set of clothes in it. And I had one of those silver blankets, the warming blankets. Mm-hmm. And I always had something to start a fire with. I figure if nothing else, I can change clothes, get dry, get under one of those blankets and gather me up some firewood, you know, some driftwood off of an island and get me a little fire going. That was kind of my essentials. I can do without food, but having that and a little extra water is not a bad idea.
Not bad at all. You're smiling, Caleb.
If he fishes with me, he's going to have to do without food because I'm quick to that lunch.
He's going to eat it all.
Hey, but
look over there. You start eating on the sandwich.
The bibs and a rain jacket and a dry bag are always great. When we left the launch the morning of the tournament, it wasn't that cold all day long. It wasn't that cold, but man. About 4 o'clock while we were waiting on that airboat, some clouds rolled in and that wind was kicking, and it darn sure got cold quick, and the rain jacket and the bib saved my butt.
Yeah. All right. So
I would usually carry those little power bars.
Yeah.
They don't taste great, but they're really good energy.
That's what I do. When Dean got stuck, my pork rinds, baby.
We got caught in one of those, the May Day storm, where we had 50-something, 60-something mile-an-hour winds out, and we were out in the lighthouse. We could see the trucks. You know, we weren't that far, but we couldn't get there just because of wind. And we pulled up next to these mangroves, and we're sitting with our backs to the mangroves, and wind was blowing so hard that the rain was going over our heads, and it was raining sideways. And so we were dry, and we were just sitting there on the side by side on the kayaks, and I pulled out one of my power bars, going to get me a little energy boost, and Dean says, you got another one of them there? I said, yeah. I reached down. I got another one, handed it over to him. He looked at it, and that little son of a bitch, he looks at it and goes, you got another flavor?
Oh, God. I don't like strawberry.
I can hear him say it.
Typical Dean move.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you got another flavor?
This is all you got? Man, you got to do better than this, Scott. My buddies, just always laugh at me because I always have hot pork rinds on the boat. That's just one of my favorites. There's something about the salt water and eating pork hot pork rinds that just is delicious. But it is protein, you know, it's pork rinds, and it's good, and it keeps you going all day, and you don't get too stuffed. In fact, speaking of the listeners, I was launching about 6 months ago, and a listener just goes, Lopez. I said, yeah. He goes, here. And he gave me a bag of hot pork rinds. I said, all right. You know what it's all about. You know what it's all about right there. All right. So now that we've talked about all that and the low tides and getting stuck, what is this? This is a question. I'll just read it here real quick. Fairly new to watching tides. Now that they have appeared to dump, when they return, will they be returning to the levels like they were last week? Or are the extremely high tides, or are they going to be extremely high tides pretty much over until next summer? And the question went on to say, since it was such a huge dump, Scott, I'll start with you, such a huge dump, just an event that just threw all the water out. What does that do to the fishing now? Does it change strategies? Does it change what fish are going to be doing? I think he asked something about, you know, are the trout going to stay deep that long? How is that going to affect things longer term?
Yeah, they'll go right back to doing what they were doing. The water's already back. I just spent a few minutes there while Caleb was going over his getting stuck story.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's about 6 inches above normal tide right now. 6 inches above predicted. Even where Caleb got stuck, it's 6 inches plus right now. So it's sitting at 1.75 over there right now, Caleb. I think you could catch fish in that. But we got northeast winds coming, and we got south. You know, with this next front, it'll be northeast, so it's not going to dump again. It's going to actually build the water up a little bit. I would expect the tides to go at least a foot to 2 feet above normal, above what the prediction is, followed up with a whole bunch of heavy southeast behind that on the warming trend.
Mm-hmm.
So I think tides are fixing to go way back up again, be back up in that grass. Redfish, all they do is they fall out to that edge, they hang out there, turn around and go right straight back in. Baitfish, the shrimp, it always depends on the shrimp, how old they are. You know, if they're big enough to migrate, then they'll go ahead. And I guess some of them probably do anyway, but I've seen them get dumped out like this and then 2 weeks later, or hell, 5 days later, mm-hmm. have shrimp back in the marsh, back in the grass again, just like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, Caleb, that's what I was wondering. And frankly, just to be honest, I didn't know, I didn't have an answer. I'm sure you do. But, you know, it's not so much what are the trout going to be doing? Are they going to be, you know, we're going to be making those long drifts in deeper water because November is awesome? Or is that going to change because the bait got swept away and are they going to come back? But for judging from what Scott said, even the bait correct themselves, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, that dump pulls all the bait out, but when the water comes back up, the bait that doesn't migrate will go back to the grass. And I could be wrong, but I think we're going to have a couple of different hatches, you know, throughout the fall, and they'll kind of replenish themselves. You'll see the shrimp migrating and the birds and everything going crazy, and then it'll be about a week where it gets in a lull, and then it'll happen again. So there's another wave of bait behind it some way or another. But no, you know, as soon as one thing Scott hadn't taught me much in my life, but one of the things that he has taught me is that if the water's touching the grass, that those fish are going to be up on the grass looking for stuff that's in it. So that's a rule of thumb that I go on just about any time I'm fishing in the bay or the back lakes. If there's water on the grass, I'm going to go check the edges of it.
Yeah, I was thinking about Scott just the other day because of that. You're in our heads now, Scott, because I saw that. I was like, well, Scott would want me to go ahead and cast right here, and I did. Oh, and speaking of which, because I want to get into the DC Reels, which is another Scott Knoll kind of wheelhouse. I said I was catching those fish, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say what I caught them on, because we always talk about that. And it was exactly just like we like to say, we use the stuff that we talk about here and that we love to promote. Me personally, I was on the, I think it was the Deadly Dudley. It wasn't the shrimp. I think it was the electric chicken caught most of my trout. And of course, you know, just to remind you, deadlydudley.com, you can use the Bite Me 20 code, one word, Bite Me 20, and you get a 20% discount. So yes, that's what I was catching the trout on. for the redfish, I caught one redfish, and then I actually caught a croaker, and then I decided to move, but I was using the knock and tail. I wasn't using the knock and tail white up in that grass that we were just talking about. And knock and tail, of course, also has, because they're taking care of us. That's why you want to join the group page. The promo code, BITEME20, one word, BITEME, the number's 20, and you can be throwing exactly what I'm throwing, what a lot of us are throwing, and it's been really, really good. So, Scott, I probably know the answer to this, but it's a question that other people, I'm sure, have. DC Reels, if you want to talk about what those are doing, when you're waiting. The question is, wondering if wade fishing with the DC reels can short out the chip. First of all, explain what that is for anybody who doesn't know and hasn't heard us talking about the DC reels before. And then if you can talk about the question.
The DC reel, it's from Shimano. They've been out for a long, long time. They've got them perfected. The technology became available where they could put it in some lower price reels. So now a whole lot more people have them now. The Corrado and the SLX, I believe it is, are the ones, the lower ends that have it, more affordable ones. Used to be just in the Calais, as far as low profile reels go, and they had it in the Calcutta as well. I've had all of them at one time or another, and they're sealed. Though the little chip in there is completely sealed up. I never dunked one to test it, but I know people that did, that mm-hmm. dunked them. It's no different than dunking any other reel. You need to clean it really good. Probably wouldn't hurt to take it into somebody like their Fish and Tackle Unlimited, their reel repair shop. Tell, you know, rinse it out, clean it up as best you can, then take it to them as fast as you can and say, hey, man, yeah, I dunked it, or my customer dunked it, or that's usually what happens with me is one of my customers dunks them.
Right.
But get them to break it down and clean it up. It's not about the chip. It's about everything else that's in the regular old reels. I'd tell you to do the same thing if you dunk a non-DC reel.
And
as far as shorting that chip out, no, it's not happening.
DC reels, you know, this is unpaid advertisement because we're fans of them. Backlash proof, Scott. I mean, you've done all kinds of tests with them and tried them, et cetera, correct?
I've thrown them into walls. you know what happens when you cast a bait caster and it suddenly stops.
Well, I've never thrown it into a wall on purpose.
Hit something. I've thrown them into walls on purpose just to try to make them. And all you get is about two or three loops of overrun. Mm-hmm. You just don't get. And this is if you got them set right too. I mean, you can loosen them all the way up like you can any other reel and screw them up.
Yeah.
The only way I ever found, and I want a steak dinner off of it, because when they first came out, the Shimano rep was there and he's like, man, you cannot, just can't backlash it. No way, no how. And he's throwing it and hitting stuff. We're at the George R. Brown. He's throwing it and running, you know, hitting whatever's available and just running the little casting plug into it. Mm-hmm. He's getting two or three little overruns. He said, you can't bird nest this. I took it and I played with it a minute. I cast it around a couple of times. Then I just threw it straight up in the air. I mean, just flipped it and made it go all the way up towards the rafters. It will backlash if you do that. That computer did not compute going straight up in the air.
I'm sure they appreciated that a lot, Scott. Yeah, I'm sure they really appreciated that. So if you want to catch a seagull, it'll backlash. If you want to,
so you can backlash it if you really, really try.
Yeah. Caleb, you ever had waders? Go ahead, Scott.
Normal fishing, you're not going to backlash that thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to happen.
You ever had waders or you ever used one? And have you ever had any issues with that?
Man, if I tell my story, I feel like Scott might be mad at me about it.
That's all right.
I personally have never touched one. I have several friends that use them. They work really well for them. I can't stand the sound that it makes. That once you hear it about three times, it's in your brain for a week. But I'll tell a quick story. I'll condense it. I've got this uncle that brings his two nephews from Tennessee, and they come fish with me once or twice a year. Every year, I've watched these kids grow up. They were little when they first started coming. And this particular timing, I think one of them was probably about 12 or 13 years old. I think one of them was 16, and they're very polite, very well-mannered, and very heavy accented. And they both have these DC reels. It was the first time I'd ever seen a DC reel. I'd heard about them. They were pretty new. And I got to figure out how to tell this where it's PG. The youngest one's sitting there casting it. And I look over at him and I said, "Hey, is that one of those reels that won't backlash?" And he stopped everything he was doing. He looked at me. He goes, "Won't backlash my ass." I was like, "Okay, then." But like Scott said, it may not have been tuned correctly. But I don't see any way that they would screw up getting them wet. And like any other rule, I've seen them broken apart. It's a solid piece. You can't get to it.
Yeah.
I've had several customers come out that only throw spinning with me. You know, they
get nervous, kind of intimidated.
But then once the wind's too high for them to fly fish, I've always got a spinning reel available, and they always pick that up. Well, one of my old time customers was out with me a while back, and I had that new DC Corrado out, and I didn't bring a spinning reel, and I just handed him that. He's looked at it, and I mean, it looked like he was trying to hold a snake. He's like, "Oh my God, what are you doing to me?" And I had him throw that thing, and by the end of the day, he said, "I'm buying one of these."
There you go.
And, he couldn't backlash. And he didn't know anything about Christmas. Throwing a bait caster.
He is.
Yeah.
Does Kate listen to the podcast?
No, Kay doesn't listen to podcasts, and everybody knows I throw lures religiously, but he is getting, I think I'm getting that SLX, the digital.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a lures guy as well.
They're good reels.
One of those. Yeah, they are. They really are good reels. And I've thrown them at fishing shows, but that's about all. All right. So wade fishing, Caleb, your wheelhouse. I enjoy it, but you're out there wading all the time. We've often talked about that mud, you know, and I'm still angry at him. I still get thrilled every time I catch a trout, but I'll try to avoid, if possible, getting out of the boat when that mud comes up, you know, or sometimes you do it by accident. You know, you go from solid mud or you know, whatever to the mud. The question was about how do you wade thick mud? And my first response was really slowly and carefully. Because you will go into the water. I mean, there are little things that I do. You know, obviously I tighten up everything real on the lower body real well. So I can if I have to, you know, really jerk my foot out or something, it won't leave my boot down there or anything. But beyond that, it's just slow and carefully. I mean, what am I missing here?
You know, I've made my name and I've made my living explaining stuff, you know, how to work a corky, how to do this, how to do that. I've tried multiple times to explain to my customers how to wade in mud, and it's just something that I can't really get across. You learn it. You just learn it by doing it. It doesn't make sense, but you learn how to walk lightly. You're not putting all your weight on one foot ever. There's always some weight on the other foot. You absolutely can't fight it. If you start trying to power through it or fight against it, you're going to make yourself deeper. You're going to wear yourself out. You just got to kind of go with the flow with it. There's really no other way that, you know, I can explain it. I had somebody after I got stuck, they sent me these shoes that are built for wading in the mud. They're great big wide things that you put on. I haven't quite figured it out yet. I know Scott and I have both talked several times about trying to figure out how to make snowshoes into mud shoes or something. But the biggest thing is, it's just kind of a ginger light, you know, kind of, I don't know, like ballerina type act where you're just real careful not to just put all your weight on one thing and just kind of go with it. Let it go the speed it lets you go. If it's slowing you down, that's not a bad thing at all, really. You know, just take it slow and work your way through it.
And, you know, Scott, you know, a lot of people are thinking, well, why would you want to put yourself through that? Because there's fish. I mean, there could be some big hosses in that mud, especially at a given time of the year. But what are your thoughts?
That's why I went to kayak fishing and poling skiffs. Was mud.
Yeah.
I mean, I've it can be miserable. I mean,
let's not
years.
Sugarcoat it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just no fun. Mm-hmm. And you can't be quiet. You know, there's just no way to wade quietly in there. One of my old buddies down in Rockport, his grandfather was a commercial fisherman, and they ran nets and did all that, you know, way back. And he would take 1x6s and put these little kind of like ski boots, you know, ski bindings, mm-hmm. and bind his feet to these little pieces of wood. And they would just kind of ski across the mud. you know, and try to stay on top of it as best they could, just slide their feet and not take actual steps. I never wanted to try that. I could just picture myself getting in some real trouble with that.
Right.
But, yeah, the best thing to do is get yourself a kayak. If you want to fish some really muddy areas, you can slide a kayak across there.
And there's
something
no
else I can't let pass by. You know, something I can't let pass by here. There's somebody out there who's really good with Photoshop. Mm-hmm. And Caleb as a ballerina is a target that I think.
While he's waiting? Is there a pic? We need to get a picture of Caleb waiting with a ballerina tutu on.
Yep.
And maybe
I think
crown.
You've opened a door there.
Yeah. You got to wait like a ballerina, Caleb.
Well, yeah. All right. Gloves are off, bud. Gloves are off.
I will say this. The reason I started, you know, and went all in with Wade, right? They have that vest where you can put the rod in the back and everything's up real high. And the reason I like it so much was mud. I mean, because a lot of times you're holding your rod or you have a tackle box off your hip on the belt. And it's, you know, you're a lot of times you have to like jerk up or move up and everything gets wet and your reel gets wet. I was just like, boom, 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 put that one up. The first time that Tim gave me, you know, the example, the demo of how to put on the weight, right, the vest, I was like, well, this is going to help in the mud. I ain't no question about that because everything's up high. You don't have to worry about your rod when you're trying to get through some stuff. So that was good. And that's coastalfishinggear.com. They too have the Bite Me 20 promo code. That's Bite Me 20, one word, coastalfishinggear.com. But that's a true story. That's exactly how I got into the Wade Wright wading belts. So there's that. All right. So here's the question. And shout out to the Outdoor Show, Captain Mickey, because this is how it starts. I was listening to the Outdoor Show with Captain Mickey, and they were discussing why fish seem to hunt and eat more on a full moon versus the sun, since the sun is way brighter than the moon. It got me to thinking about the bait fish like mullet, croaker, piggy perch, or whatever, mud minnows, and shrimp. Scott, your expertise, your wheelhouse, do they have the lateral lines, or do they just go off of sight? I'm thinking he's talking more bait than fish, because we know the fish have the lateral lines, and they can, and we've talked about it here. They can sense the bait. That's why it's okay to fish even in pitch black, as Caleb has said he likes to do, not necessarily in the full moon. But what does that do with bait? And I guess he's talking in terms of, you know, finding the bait in the moonlight, which obviously leads to finding the fish.
Yeah, not all fish have a lateral line. To some, it's more important than others. But it's my understanding that's how bait fish stay in schools, and they can all move in the same direction the way they do is based off the lateral lines.
Mm-hmm.
Shrimp, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a new really, one. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think shrimp have any kind of lateral
wish I could help.
Lateral line of any kind. But they do have long, long feelers, you know, their antenna. So I'm guessing that's maybe acts as their lateral line. I don't know. But, I mean, I don't know that it's so much that they feed more on a full moon, you know, than they do on a dark moon.
Yeah.
I mean, Caleb and I have talked about that a lot, you know, over the years, wade fishing. It's easier for us to wade fish on a full moon. So that's probably why we think that they feed more, because that's the only times that some people go out there.
Mm-hmm.
Wade fishing on a really, really dark night can be interesting. You know, you still get the bites. Mm-hmm. You get out there and your eyes get adjusted and you start realizing you really can see even when there's no moon. You know, there's still enough ambient light just from starlight that you can actually see a little bit. The reason they don't during full bright sun is fish feed when, you know, when the light's dimmer, you know, low light conditions. That's why we fish in the mornings and the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
So morning light and evening light is similar to night, you know, with the moon. That would be my answer to that, I guess. There's such a thing as too bright.
Right.
You know, they want to be able to hide and stalk their prey and ambush their prey from a position of strength.
And Caleb, you've lived this. You've talked about how you like to fish dark.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Scott's spot on that it gives them a little bit more of an ambush advantage. But I think that it also has a lot to do with they aren't being pressured near as much at nighttime. The boats aren't running around and making a bunch of noise. Somebody hasn't just got done stomping out that cove right before you got there. I think that has a lot to do with it as well. So they're getting a atmosphere that they like to eat in. Plus they get to act like fish again, and they're not constantly running from people and noises and wakes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no question. Okay, so I know, Scott, you're always looking at tides and weather and other vital information for us. Before I get to what would Scott do and what would Caleb do, I forgot to mention for Knock and Tail, it's mycoastoutdoors.com. So just to reiterate, deadlydudley.com for Deadly Dudleys, obviously, which I throw, mycoastoutdoors.com for Knock and Tail, and coastalfishinggear.com for Wade Wright, just to clear that up. What would Scott do? You're looking at it right now. I can tell. I can see your head all gauged over there a little bit. What should our listeners who are going out maybe tonight, Wednesday night, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, what should they be looking at?
Wednesday's going to be prefrontal. You know, a lot of east and heavy clouds. Thursday, they're talking about some pretty good rain, about an inch or so of rain overnight, coming with a front. And different ones are saying different things about this front as far as how cold it's going to get. I'm seeing everything from low 60s to possibly low 50s.
I saw 49.
I've seen some oddball. I think the computers just aren't quite all together on this, like they do on hurricanes.
Might be indecisive.
Everybody works off a different.
Might be information they can't quite put out there yet because you know, changing conditions and such. But what would you do?
Well, you got northeast, so it's not going to drop the tides. We're not going to have a big fallout. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's dying out front. You know, post front, it's going to be clear. I would be prowling around up in those shallow lakes and watching for wakes, looking for, I think the big schools of reds are going to move back into the lakes again, and the shrimp will be somewhat out of the grass a little bit, getting ready to move out about this time of year. So you typically see bigger schools behind one of these fallouts. I've always had my little suspicions about that. You know, you spend a lot of time out on the water scouting and being by yourself and polling, you think a lot. And I always wonder, you know, why in the world, why do I have small schools pre-front and then post-front I got these really big schools? Well, if you think about it, all that water fell out. Those fish fell out. They all fell into deeper holes. Water comes back. Now they're all grouped up in those deeper holes. And when they leave, there's bigger schools. Mm-hmm. If you get a week or so, 2 weeks without another good dump front, then those schools start breaking up again. They get smaller and smaller and smaller. It's just a theory, but it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Hey, Caleb, in our neck of the woods, it looks like it's going to be light wind, but northeast wind, which might have an effect on the water. What are you looking at?
I'm going to be out in the middle of the bay looking for birds, looking for schools of trout, and then first excuse I get, I'll be in the back lakes looking for schools of redfish. This is the time of year that I look forward to every year, and it's going to happen until probably early January, late December. So that's exactly what I'm going to be doing. My customers asked me if they should bring waders. I said, nope, leave them at home. We are going to be out looking for schools of stuff, eating smaller schools of other stuff.
So you're getting back on the horse.
We're back. I'm guiding the 5th through the 23rd, I think.
Oh, my goodness. That's what I would do. I actually am not going to be on the water this weekend, unfortunately, because I really want to be out there like doing what Caleb is doing. My oldest son's having his bachelor party weekend in New Orleans. I'm not going to do all the crazy stuff, but I think they want to play golf Friday and maybe have a dinner, something like that. So I might be out there Sunday, to be honest. I told my wife I might just drive straight back to Sargent and be out there Sunday. Going to be good weather, light northeast wind. Oh, I meant to ask you follow up on that, Caleb. Water's not going to be affected too much unless that northeast wind picks up significantly.
I think it should be all right. You know, we've got a little bit of wind coming in. I think we're going to keep some clean water here and there, and I don't think the tide's dropping at all with this one. So I think it's just going to set us up for nice, cool, clear skies, you know, chasing schools of fish.
All right. Scott, before I get in, if you have any parting thoughts, Scott Knoll Photography. I saw Camille mulling about over there. I'm sure she's on top of this, but scottknollphotography.com for all the Bite Me gear. If you want to throw us some gas money, we would appreciate that to get these guys out and about and continuing to grab that information and enhance the information that we put on the podcast. But scottknollphotography.com, and you've got a big weekend coming up. Not this weekend, I believe, or is it? For your photography contest.
Oh, that was last weekend. That was last Saturday. Placed five or six photos. Got first place in the other mammals category of armadillo shot that I got. And did okay.
Is that the one that you were stalking on the road that you told me about?
Yep. I saw him going back and forth through the grass, and I got down. It was about a foot and a half of grass on either side. And then the little trail where you drive. And I just got down in that trail and just started crawling towards him. And he popped out right in front of me. And then he couldn't figure out what I was. I took two or three shots and they were okay. But then he stood up. Mm-hmm. And when he stood up on his hind legs to look at me to get a better view, I guess, I got the winning shot with that.
Who would have thought? Armadillo, first place. So five or six places. I'm sure it was a great event. You've talked about it in the past. They do a really good job. They put all the pictures up there. And I know our listeners can go to Scott Knoll Photography, and they can now buy some of those that you won with.
I am going to work on that probably Thursday morning when it's raining and that cold front's coming in. Before that, I've got a few things to do around the ranch here, cleaning up and mowing and doing some things before it rains again. But, yeah, I think Thursday morning, while it's pretty nasty out, I'll sit in here and go over them and get with Camille. She's the one who actually puts them on the website.
Right.
I fix them up, clean them up, and hand them off to her, and she puts them in there for me.
All right. Well, shout out to Camille for
that. Hopefully we'll have them in there by Friday.
Soon. Yeah, soon. And for all the Bite Me gear that you can purchase there as well, and we really appreciate it. All right, boys. Caleb, you have any other parting thoughts?
I don't. It's good to be back in Texas. I'm looking forward to it.
And your boat is all in working order.
Oh, man. You know, oddly enough, I didn't tear up anything on the boat. Just a little bit of ego.
All right.
Well, that was Daniel's boat that y'all were stuck in, wasn't it?
Maybe.
Didn't tear anything up on my boat.
my boat was fine.
There was 4 foot of water in there when my boat was in it.
That's right. All right, boys, man. We really appreciate it. We appreciate you guys listening. Don't forget about joining the Bite Me group page on Facebook and, of course, subscribing to this podcast. Could be a good week, could be a good month. We will keep you updated. I'm probably going to sneak back down there on Sunday. I can't help myself. So if you see me out on the water, just make sure I'm not on a fish. And we're happy to say hello. You guys have a great week. Catch a bunch of fish, and we will talk to you next time.